Hello there. Glad to have you with us this morning. I always enjoy when we have the opportunity to get together and fellowship with one another, and I don't want to over-communicate this, but just want to remind everybody about our 5 o'clock Bible question and answer tonight. We had a lot of questions that were submitted, so we probably won't be able to get to all of the questions, but we encourage you to come anyway, and if your question is not answered during our 5 o'clock service, we would encourage you to talk to us a little bit. Come meet with us one-on-one, and we'll be glad to discuss some of these things with you a little bit further as well. But go on ahead and plan to be there tonight, and then it sounds like next week, go ahead and plan to bring an air mattress and a tent as well, because it sounds like we're going to be here for most of the day that day as well. As we think about this idea of being in a world of faithlessness and continuing on to what we've been talking about for the last couple of months, I wanted to take our minds back to a place that we're all familiar with. You may remember the street that you grew up on, and I want to take you back to that street specifically. Now, as we think about that and as we think about our home street, you may have something in mind as you are envisioning that, but I want you to think about something a little bit different this morning. I want you to think about the street that we all grew up on communally. See, you may not have realized that we all grew up on the streets. We all grew up on one specific street, and of course, I'm talking about Sesame Street. Probably for some of us, this is a little more, you know, recent. You're probably still going through some of this, and I may be as well, because, I mean, it's still fun, right? There's some great stuff that happens. You learn a lot. You get some letters. You get some numbers. And you learn some very important life lessons on this street. Most of our lives have been shaped by this street. But I want to think about one thing specifically, and for some of us who may be a little bit further removed from our days on the street, this may not come back quite as quickly, but for some of you who maybe have watched it more recently, this is going to be more familiar. Every now and then you'd get a little section in the street where you would have to determine whether or not one of four things belonged. You know, they put four things up in front of you and they'd say, now one of these things just doesn't belong here. Let me give you an example. You'd have something all along these lines. And you'd have to choose which one of these things is not like the other. And of course, as you look at this picture, it's fairly obvious. I don't know how well that's showing up on the screen for you guys, but it's fairly obvious which one of these things stands out amongst the other ones. They were never terribly difficult games to play. And I just thought I'd share a couple of others with you this morning as I was scrolling for some pictures like this. I discovered some fun ones on the internet where you've got some who try to fit in but clearly stand out fairly obviously. You start to slide up the scale of difficulty just a little bit when you get into some of the Photoshop imagery and you try to pick out which one of those things doesn't necessarily belong there. And then, of course, as you go a little bit further down the rabbit hole, if you will, you get into some of these other pictures where it's very obvious that someone is trying to fit in but really doesn't. It's very obvious when something stands out. But then you have the opposite end of the spectrum, and this one took me a little while. You have the opposite end of the spectrum where you fit in so well that someone's got to take a lot of time to, I just realized that all these pictures are animals. It takes a lot of time with some of these pictures to figure out which one of these things is not like the other. And so as we use that as our framework for what we're talking about this morning, I want to ask ourselves the question. In a world of faithlessness, do I fit in or do I stand out? Am I different from the people who are around me? You see, we don't really like to be the people who stand out for the most part. There are some weirdos out there, right? There are a few of us who do enjoy the spotlight a little bit more than others. But as far as humanity in general, for the most part, we don't want to be the one who people can point at and say, that one's different. We want to kind of blend in, whether it be for our own comfort or whether it be for the comfort of the people around us, we want to fit in with them as best as we possibly can. And yet, as we've been considering throughout this whole year, some different aspects of the world that we live in and honing in on this idea of the world of faithlessness, we know that that is not a world that we should fit into. And yet, if we honestly ask ourselves the question, in a world of faithlessness, do I fit in or do I stand out? I think the question comes back and the answer comes back for a lot of us. We're still trying to fit in. We want to fly under the radar. We want to look just like everybody else, the main difference being that we show up at church on Sunday morning. You know, you think about the friends that you have, the groups that you run in. You think about your family members. You think about the people that you work with. If you were to tell them tomorrow, if the first thing you did when you walked in to wherever it is you're going tomorrow morning, if you were to say, you know what, I'm a Christian, I believe in Jesus Christ, and I follow him with all of my heart, would they be surprised? Would the people in our lives be shocked to hear that we serve Christ with all of our hearts? Because I would submit to you, if they would be shocked to hear that, then we're not following Christ with all of our hearts, and we're trying to fit in to the world of faithlessness. I want to look at a few things this morning from the book of 1 Peter that demonstrates to us how Christians are supposed to live separately, differently, in a world of faithlessness. When we go out into the world, people should be able to look at us and say, one of these things is not like the other. As we get into the book of 1 Peter, Peter is talking to Christians who are dealing with the worst stress that they ever possibly could. These Christians who are here in that Peter is talking to, they're dealing with this persecution that we know a little bit about, but the most that we know about it is the fact that they don't know what's going to happen to them tomorrow. If they profess the name of Christ, they could be murdered, they could be thrown in jail, their families could be taken away from them. They're faced with the worst possible stress that they could be faced with, and Peter writes to them to encourage them to continue to remain separate. In a world that is going to condemn you for who you are as a Christian, Peter says, I want you to continue to be a Christian. I want you to continue to stand out. In a time where fitting in would have mean saving their own lives, Peter says, I want you to stand out. Look with me in 1 Peter chapter 1, beginning in verse 13. He says, therefore, prepare your mind for action. Keep sober in spirit. Fix your hope completely on the grace to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, do not be conformed to the former lusts which were yours in ignorance, but like the Holy One who called you, be holy yourselves also in all your behavior. Because it is written, you shall be holy, for I am holy. What a powerful passage as he introduces his concepts in this letter. Peter comes to them and he uses this idea of holiness. And if we were to go back and we were to look at what the idea of holiness is rooted in, it's not what we've kind of morphed it into, this idea of sainthood and certain people being elevated to a specific status. Holiness at its root, when we go back and look at what the original definition means, is simply being set apart. It's being separated for a specific purpose. When you go back and you look at the Old Testament and you look at what God is doing with the people of Israel. And back in Deuteronomy chapter 7, he's going to say, you are a holy people to the Lord your God because the Lord has chosen you to be a people for his own possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. Now, step back with me for just a minute. There's nothing particularly special about the people of Israel at this point. There's nothing particularly different about them as far as humanity goes. They are just human beings. They're regular people. And yet God has said, you are to be holy, and I am setting you apart for a specific purpose. This is what holiness is. I am going to give you a job, and I'm going to separate you for that particular job. And of course, we know that for Israel, their particular job, their particular role is to make sure that the Messiah comes into the world. That's why they're God's chosen people, not because of anything special about them, but because they had a special purpose. They had a special job. And so they were to be separate from the world around them. And so when we pick this up, Peter, using this exact same language, when he talks to the church in 1 Peter chapter 1, he says, as you look at the world around you, he says, God has called you to be separate. God has separated you for a specific purpose. It's not about who you are. It's not about anything special that you've done. This is entirely about God setting you apart so that you can proclaim the excellencies of His Son, so that you can proclaim the things that He has done for you. But that's the general idea of holiness. Look with me at the specific idea of holiness as he talks about in verse 15. He says, like the Holy One who called you, you be holy yourselves in all your behavior. So it's not just some kind of general, God has set me apart for a purpose. That's the big idea, but there's something very specific that Peter wants to get across here. Your behavior defines you. The actions that you take are what people associate with you. Now, you can speak your words all day long, and you can say whatever you want, you can write whatever you want, but at the end of the day, the way people are going to look at you is going to be judged entirely upon the actions that you take. And so as Peter writes to the church here, he says, in your behavior, you are to be separate from the world around you. You shouldn't fit in with them. You shouldn't be like them. He says, you are to be separate so that you can, as Jesus might say, shine as a light for the generation who is around you. In a world of faithlessness, Christians are meant to be separate. Now go with me for just a moment to chapter 2. We've read a little bit of this already, but let's pick up in verse 1. He says, therefore, putting aside all malice and deceit, and hypocrisy and envy and all slander, like newborn babies, long for the pure milk of the word, so that you may grow in respect of salvation, if you have tasted the kindness of the Lord. Stop right there for just a minute. Look at what he says there in verse 1. He goes back to this idea of behavior again. So between these two passages, he's talked a lot about Christ. He's talked a lot about Christ being the unblemished sacrifice for us. And then he talks about the obedience that we're supposed to have. But then before he introduces this next idea, he says, now let me come back to the behavior idea. He says, I want you to think about all the things that you did when you were part of the world of faithlessness. When you were part of the world that was outside of Christ, that was outside of the church. Think about all of those things that you did. And he says, I want you to put all of those things aside. Let your behavior be holy and separate. Matter of fact, a little bit later on in the book of 1 Peter in chapter 4, he's going to say this again in chapter 4, verses 1 through 3. And he's going to list off several different things that the church there had been a part of. And then he's going to go on in verse 3 of 1 Peter chapter 4. He's going to say, you have spent enough of your past lifetime in these sins. There's a couple of different ways that you can look at that particular saying. Number one being that no matter how much time they had spent in sin, they had seen all that it had to offer. No matter that, had they spent a minute, had they spent 100 years in the world of faithlessness, they had seen everything that it had to offer them. And Peter says, it's enough. You know that there's not going to be anything more that comes out of that, so stop. Don't try to fit in with it. Don't try to go back to it. But he says, instead, you change your behavior. And so as we go down just a little bit further here in chapter 2, picking up where our scripture reading was in verse 4, it says, come to him as to a living stone, which has been rejected by men, but is choice and precious in the sight of God. You also, as living stones, are being built up as a spiritual house for a holy priesthood, to offer up spiritual sacrifices acceptable to God through Jesus Christ. For this is contained in Scripture, behold, I lay in Zion a choice stone, a precious cornerstone, and he who believes in him will not be disappointed. This precious value, then, is for you who believe. For those who disbelieve, though, the stone which the builders rejected this became the very cornerstone. And a stone of stumbling and a rock of offense, for they stumble because they are disobedient to the word, and to this doom they were also appointed. But you are a chosen race. You are a royal priesthood. You are a holy nation. You are a people for God's own possession, so that you may proclaim the excellencies of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light. For you once were not a people, but now you are the people of God. You had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. Again, comparing us to what Christ has done and looking at that perfect stone that we are to compare ourselves to, he comes in and he reminds us. He says, now look, there are people who rejected Christ. There are people who have rejected the cornerstone. And yet you, because you have accepted him as the cornerstone, because you have followed Christ, he is the foundation for the things that you do. And so he says, because of that, you are chosen. You are priests. Now stop and think about that for a minute. When we consider the idea of priesthood in the Old Testament and all of the different things that had to go on, the particular tribe that the priests had to come from, the particular families that they had to deal with, all of the different things that they had to do on a regular basis to make sure that the sacrifices were acceptable to God, to make sure that the worship was acceptable to God, all of these major responsibilities that the priests of the Old Testament times had to do. And yet Peter comes to the church here and he says, you individually are a priest of God. You as a whole in the church are a priesthood. As we go back and we look at the differences between the priests of the Old Testament and the rest of the Israelite nation, there were clear and obvious differences between them. Peter says, this is the kind of difference that people should see between you and the world. You are a priest. You are able to come to God on your own. Through Jesus Christ, you are in a priesthood. It's a pretty amazing and a heavy responsibility for each and every one of us. But it demonstrates to us how different we are supposed to be from the world around us. When we come back in, and I know I've mentioned this before, but I'm gonna bring it up again because I like it. When you come down to the rest of this passage, you get to the King James Version, which translates this as a peculiar people. And I like that word, peculiar. It may not be the best definition, best translation of that word, but I think as far as our language, we understand what someone means when they say peculiar, right? You know, you see a little boy eating glue in the back of the classroom, you say, well, that boy's peculiar, right? We understand that when we use the word peculiar, that means it's someone who is different from the standard. It's something that is unexpected. It's different from the norm. And so when we come into this passage and we see Peter calling the church a peculiar people, what he's saying is, you are different from the norm. You are different from the people who are around you. And he's going to go on here. He's going to say, beloved, I urge you as aliens and strangers to abstain from fleshly lusts which wage war against the soul. Again, keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles, so that in the thing which they slander you as evildoers, they may, because of your good deeds, as they observe them, glorify God in the day of visitation. He says, you are meant to be strangers in the world around you. We just sang several songs about going to heaven, right? We sang several songs about our future home and what we're looking forward to. And it reminds us that we don't belong here, do we? When we think about, you know, that Sesame Street thing, one of these things just doesn't belong here. When we think about us in the hand of God, we don't belong here. We're looking forward to something greater. But what do our actions display about that? How do our actions define what we think? He says, keep your behavior excellent among the Gentiles. Those people who are outside the church, those people who may not be with you every time you're worshiping God, those are the people you need to ensure that you are acting properly around. Because those are the people who are going to judge your actions and whether or not you are a follower of Christ. And so that takes us into 1 Peter chapter 3. Come with me down to 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 8. He says, to sum up. I like it when people say to sum up and then write two more chapters. It's kind of like a sermon when you say, now, and the conclusion, and then we talk for 20 more minutes. So in conclusion, all of you be harmonious, be sympathetic, brotherly, kind-hearted, and humble in spirit, not returning evil for evil or insult for insult, but giving a blessing instead. For you were called for the very purpose that you might inherit a blessing. For the one who desires life to love and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from speaking deceit. He must turn away from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous and his ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? But even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. Do not fear their intimidation. Do not be troubled. But sanctify Christ as the Lord in your hearts, always being ready to make a defense to everyone who asks you to give an account for the hope that is in you, yet with gentleness and reverence. Keep a good conscience, so that in the thing in which you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ will be put to shame. For it is better, if God should will it so, that you suffer for doing what is right rather than for doing what is wrong. Listen to those first two verses again as he talks about what it really means to be different. All of you, be harmonious. Be in one accord. Be unified. Be sympathetic. Be brotherly. Be kind-hearted. Be humble in spirit. If you were just to take that one verse and say, I'm going to make it my life's goal to follow that one verse, would you not look different? Would you not stand out from the world that is around us? A world that is constantly seeking its own, a world of faithlessness? We would absolutely stand out. Do not return evil for evil. Do not return insult for insult. That's a pretty hard one to deal with. Because when we're insulted, when we're offended, our immediate response is almost always going to be, well, I can one-up that. But what if we didn't? What if we said, I am going to be peaceable. I am going to seek peace. Peter says, who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for doing what is good? These kind of attitudes, these are the things that should identify us, that people should be able to look at and say, this person is not like the people who are around them. And because of that conversation, because of that thought, because of the actions that we take on our day, in our day-to-day lives, Peter says we need to be ready. We need to be ready because when we take those actions, when we stand out, when we are different, he says we need to be ready to give a defense for our faith, for everyone who asks us to give an account. Because when we stand out, it is inevitable that someone is going to come to us and say, why are you the way that you are? You know, I've noticed everybody else in this office is going to this party, is drinking this drink, is going to, saying these things, but you don't do that. I've noticed that everybody in this school gets caught up in a certain amount of drama, and I've noticed that you stay away from that. Why are you the way that you are? Peter says, be ready to give a defense and explain to them, I am the way that I am because God has separated me. God has given me a purpose, and that purpose is to proclaim the excellencies of His Son in a world of faithlessness. And because of that, we turn to 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4 and verse 7, he says, the end of things, all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. Above all, keep fervent your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. As each one has received a special gift, employ it in serving one another as good stewards of the manifold grace of God. Whoever speaks is to do so as one who is speaking the utterances of God. Whoever serves is to do so as one who is serving by the strength which God supplies, so that in all things God may be glorified through Jesus Christ, to whom belongs the glory and the dominion forever and ever. These last two passages especially, as we open up those first two chapters, Peter says, you're to be different, you're to be separate, you're to be holy, you're to be strangers. But in these last two passages here, he says, here's how you do this. This isn't just some nebulous idea that's out there. There are actual tangible things that you can achieve in your life and that I can achieve in my life to make sure that I look different, to make sure that we look different in a world of faithlessness. And he says it starts with our love. He says, keep fervent for one another in love. Be hospitable to one another. Do it without complaining. And there's probably something deeper behind that one as well. You know, as we think about the idea of being hospitable without complaining, there are probably several other things that Peter could tack that one onto, aren't there? There are several other things that Peter could say, now do this and do it without complaining, because we like to complain. If we are chosen by God, if we are holy people, if we are priests in the priesthood of Christ, that means that we have a responsibility to stand out and to be stewards of the manifold grace of God. And here's what that means. That means I take what God has given to me, the grace that God has given to me, the love that God has shown me, and I spread it to everybody that I can. That means not hiding and ducking down and making sure that I fit in with everybody else around me. That means not covering it up until God comes back. That means taking it and demonstrating it to everybody that I come across. That's what it means to be a steward of the manifold grace of God. That means making sure that God's grace reaches every ear that I come into contact with. That stands out. That is different. So in a world of faithlessness, we come back to the same question. Do I fit in or do I stand out? God is calling us in the world that we live in to stand out so that people can look at us and say, one of these things is not like the other. So that people can look at us and say, there's something different about you. And if we are displaying the manifold grace of God like this, then people will look at us and say, not only is there something different about you, but I want that. I want to be at peace like you are. I want to demonstrate love like you do. I want the manifold grace of God. And we can give it to them, but we can't fit in. We can't be people of faithlessness. In a world of faithlessness, our faithfulness should define us. And so I ask all of us this morning, I ask myself, I ask you to ask yourself, am I fitting in or am I standing out? This morning, God is calling you. He's calling me to stand out in our world. And if you need to take the first steps toward that by faith, repentance, confession, and baptism into Christ to demonstrate your desire to stand out, to experience the manifold witness of God, and to witness to what Christ has done for us, you have an opportunity to do that this morning. And if you've done that before, but you have tried, you said, you know what, I don't want to do this anymore. I've ducked down. I've tried to fit into the world around me. If you said nobody would recognize me as a Christian in my life, it's time to make a difference. It's time to be different. And you can make that change this morning. We'll be happy to help you. We'll be happy to pray with you and for you and talk with you and walk with you the whole way if you'll make it known while we stand and sing.